the disagreement is turning pretty dark.
We have a divided nation. We have a very divided nation.
We seem to be living in a time of utter tribalism.
If it's true for you, then it's true.
No, it's not.
In order to be able to think, you have to risk being offensive. I mean, look at the conversation we're having right now.
Nothing is as important as the truth of God revealed in Scripture.
Welcome to Disagree With Me, a podcast dedicated to considerate conversations on taboo topics. My name is Angel Rodriguez. I am your host, as always, joined by Mr. Caleb Powers.
Hey, I'm here on the ones and twos, ready to talk about one of my favorite topics.
Yes, sir. And believe it or not, this is something that rarely ever happens now, but we have another guest.
We do
have a guest. Two episodes in a row.
Yep.
Today we are joined by Josh, also known as the Iowan Cap on Twitter. Welcome, sir.
Hey, good to be here. I'm really excited to disagree / change my opinion on the fly just because I want you guys to like me so much.
Well, you're the right man for the job. Amazing. We have you on. That's what we try to find. I told Caleb we should script our episodes so that in the end we always end up winning.
I have the power of editing. I can do whatever I want.
Just cut everything that I say so it just looks like I'm sitting there in shocked silence. Yeah, while
you're it's like, oh, you don't have anything to say. Guess we win. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. But in all seriousness, I don't know how much disagreeing it'll be. Like Caleb said, this is one of his favorite things to talk about. I just have a lot of questions. Josh, just looking at your Twitter bio, you're the first person I think that I've ever come across that is a pastor and also would describe themselves as an anarchist. So my first question off the bat is, what is an anarchist? Like, what do you mean by that term?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there are millions of definitions. One of the things that I do as a podcast called the Anarchist Bible Study.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we did in deciding it, we could have gone with the more generic mainstream libertarian Bible study, but we're like, for one thing, it's self-consciously clickbait, and we're okay with that. So the shock is kind of part of it. But like the brand of anarchism that I espouse would be of the libertarian philosophy anarchism. Like, so it's you could call it a whole bunch of other names, like anti-statism. You could call it voluntarism. Sometimes I get a little cheeky and call it other things, like I call it patriarchism. But that's
yeah,
a whole
yeah.
other thing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But,
I knew we were going to be on the same wavelength. I call myself an anarcho-theonomist.
That's actually another label that we came up with. It's actually funny. On one of our first episodes, we had showed the video to one of Jeff Park is my partner on that show.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had showed it to one of his friends, and he kind of was like, "So you guys are kind of like theonomic deconstructionists." And we're like, that's brilliant. Can we take that? So yeah, that was that's kind of the idea is it kind of all starts with I'll put it in the generic philosophy sense. I have some adjustments on that that I make myself, but the most generic way of understanding anarcho-capitalism, which is the most common way of calling it, or libertarian anarchism, is there's a private property rights absolutism. So you own your property. Also self-ownership, which is the idea that I own myself. Now I always hasten when I'm talking to Christians to say, this is from a human perspective, not from a divine perspective. Yes, God owns me as well as God owns all my property. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, but I own myself from a horizontal perspective. And so therefore no one has the right. And this is kind of the, unfortunately, it becomes meme worthy the way it's sometimes applied, but the concept of not the non-aggression principle, the idea that you're not allowed to commit aggressive acts against another person's property or person because they own themselves and they own their property. And so what makes anarcho-capitalism specifically is it's kind of a more consistent application of that to say, and the same goes for organizations calling themselves governments. They can't steal your stuff. They can't steal, they can't aggress against your person. And of course, we also should be clear that aggression we define not as any hostile activity or any violent activity, but as the initiation of force. So you can you can always respond to someone else initiating force or the threat of force. If someone is threatening to shoot you, you don't have to wait until someone pulls the trigger to respond. And so those are kind of the clarity of that. And what also makes me like, it leaves us in a place where some anarchists say I'm not a real anarchist, but then they're all communists, so I don't care. Because yeah, we do believe in hierarchies. Anarcho-capitalists specifically believe in hierarchy. In fact, one of the things we will say is that the natural order is really what we're looking for. When humans naturally order themselves, what does it end up looking like? Which is why I will sometimes cheekily call myself a patriarchist, because I think that's what it'll look like in a natural order, is fathers ruling over tribes.
Nice.
So that's kind of a short answer.
Yeah. No, that's a good answer. The first time, or whenever I hear anarchy, honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is like the 2020 riots. And I'm sure a lot of people, when they hear that word, that's what they think about. So I just wanted to clarify, so that people aren't like hearing like Christian anarchists. What does that mean? Like, we're going to go out and burn down buildings and.
That's anarcho tyranny.
And anarcho communists, which technically, yes, they do have the better argument for owning the word. And that's why I don't get too broken up when they start calling me not a real anarchist. Like, okay, sure. Well, you're a communist. I don't care. But yeah, like, that's definitely not what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good clarification. How did you like come across this? Like, did you grow up believing this or like, where did you come? Ideologically speaking, like, where did you come from to get to this?
Yeah. That's kind of a weird longish story. I grew up just kind of a conservative. I think it's not quite fair to call my dad a neocon, though he's got neoconish tendencies. And I very much valued and still do value my father and his opinions. And so I was just a conservative like he was. It was actually while reading, it's kind of an ironic origin story, because while reading Mark Levin's Liberty and Tyranny, which I was borrowing from a boss of mine at a church camp, that he started talking about the different types of conservatism. So he talked about neoconservatism, and then traditional conservatism, and then defined actually libertarianism as a type of conservatism. Now, I don't know that all libertarians would be okay with that, or
certainly not all conservatives would be okay with that.
Certainly not all conservatives. Yeah. And that put me on to a bunch of organizations that I'm going to shamefully list because I need to own my L's. But I was listening to like Reason Magazine and Cato Institute, a bunch of, we call them Beltway libertarians because they're always like, we hate the government, but also please invite us to your parties. That's very much their whole shtick. But then what ended up happening is, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a pastor. Well, I went to seminary, and one of the things, I was also going through a theological reevaluation at the time. And so I was raised in the Presbyterian Church USA, but I was in a very conservative church of that. And so they were pretty much very generically evangelical. And but I was surrounded by a bunch of Presbyterians who I thought Presbyterian equaled liberal, because that's the world I grew up in. But then I started reading the Westminster Standards and realizing, like, holy crap, like, you guys were like hiding this from me. This is like our our origin story. This is great. And I was even, my youth group was actually called the WF, which was short for Westminster Fellowship. Like, I mean, you guys never let me read this stuff. And I was just going deep into the classical Reformed works. And I was having kind of a theological revolution.
You became a real Presbyterian is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, and then I kept going and became Baptist.
You reformed all the way.
But basically in that time, I realized like, okay, I need to know what I believe about the Bible before I start working on secondary things like politics. And so I actually kind of just distanced myself from political philosophy, and I didn't vote all the time I was in seminary. I didn't pay any attention. I was just like, I'm going to figure out what I believe about God's word and about theology. And one of the things that I really loved about Reformed theology was it's kind of radical adherence to first principles, like that there was that it wasn't like groupthink, like everyone does this because this is what everyone who is of this, like, that's what I started seeing. I always saw that with liberals. And then as I moved out, I started seeing it with conservatives too, that there was kind of a groupthink. There wasn't a principled reason for all thinking alike. It was just like, we all think alike because this is what we think about. And so after I came out of that, I started like reevaluating, being like, all right, so I'm going to try and figure out what I am politically. I got to own my L's. I flirted with third wayism for a little while. I tried going back to just my old conservatism. Because one of the things that I realized during my theological journey is that I couldn't go back to the libertarianism that I had known before. Like that reason, Cato libertarianism, which is basically do whatever you want. And no one can tell you what to do. I was like, I can't go back to that. But then I met a bunch of guys who called themselves Reformed Libertarians. I was like, oh, that's an option. And they started teaching me about, you know, the old Rothbard and Hans Hermann Hoppe and Ludwig von Mises. Those are kind of the big names in libertarian circles. And at one point I was just asking, and the joke is, what's the difference between a libertarian and an anarchist? About 6 months. For me, it was actually a lot quicker because I was just listening to them talking and being like, why not just go all the way and become an anarchist? And they said, good point. And I went, So that was kind of my journey. Since then I've modified some things. So I'm sure when I describe my political philosophy, most of my libertarian friends are probably not going to agree with me. But this is kind of, that's the general stream of thought that I found a home in for largely the same reason, a dedication to first principles. That'd be a big thing.
Do you, you said you didn't vote during seminary. Do you vote now?
I do. Okay. I do. Yeah. And that's kind of so the Libertarian Party is kind of getting better, than what it used to. It'll take a little time before people start seeing that. But there's been kind of a little bit of the right kind of libertarians have kind of risen up to prominence and taken the party back. But they're kind of just figuring out how to do it. Yeah. And so there's also like kind of an in-house debate among libertarians of like, so do we try to build this new party or do we just try and work within the Republican Party? And I kind of just do a little bit of both. I do vote. I'm not one of those. There's some libertarians who say that voting is violence. I think that's garbage. I think.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I'm actually starting to lean back a little bit away from never voting myself. I'm actually currently thinking through that right now. Yeah, continue.
No, it's good. It's a good question. It's a good conversation to have. Yeah. I think the big problem I have with it is that it's like, okay, so what if it is violence for one thing? Like, it's okay to use violence in self-defense. We've always said that. And if I can, and also like, it's just, if I can choose to lessen, the tyranny over me, then I'll do that. However, I'll say that I don't feel obligated to vote. Like that if there's no one on the ballot that I like, yep. I am perfectly willing to
That's pretty much where I am right now.
Or yeah. Write in Mickey Mouse or something like that, you know.
Yeah, when Caleb lived around me, I would put him down as one of my candidates.
That's true.
Unfortunately, he never won.
I never got more than that vote, I think.
I think I convinced my wife to vote for you too. So
I think he did. Yeah. I got
my proudest moment is and I was pretty loud about this, is I did in fact vote for Kanye West, and I do not regret it.
That's hilarious.
I went all in because I was like, the whole thing was a joke. I didn't like the Libertarian candidate. I didn't really like anyone. So I was like, I am standing outside, and this line is so long. I would leave if I didn't know that Kanye needed me. So I'm gonna stay here.
Oh man, that's funny. So is that who you're voting for next election?
I don't know. It depends on something to shake up.
Yeah,
depends on a lot of things.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So help me understand. So when you say anarchist, you're not necessarily saying, or at least this is what I'm understanding. Maybe I'm wrong in my understanding of this. And Caleb, you could probably speak to this too. You're not necessarily saying that there is no government over, like, at all. Is that correct? Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, you see, that's actually interesting. There's a old article, old essay that we would pass around called Our Enemy the State by Albert J. Nock, where he talks about the difference between state and government. So mm-hmm. We would say that the state is definitely a government, but governments don't necessarily have to be the state.
Yep.
So we define state at, well, you know, government would be, I would just use some biblical terminology here and say that the government is the sword. Government is the use of the sword on more than an individual basis. But a state is a government that demands territorial. Okay. That I'm going to see, this is an adjustment that I've made, is that it demands it is an unjust seizure of monopoly of force over a given territory. I say unjust because since I'm a private property absolutist, I believe that a government could justly and legitimately come to gain a large territory by purchasing, by voluntary submission, and then it would be a just use of the sword in over territory. But an unjust claim of territorial monopoly would be a state. You know, and that would be what we oppose as libertarians or as anarcho-capitalists.
And so most of the states we're looking at, probably all of them that you'd point to on the news would be in that category right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
no, like I said before, like the word anarchy comes to mind, and all of a sudden it's like complete free for all. Anybody can do whatever they want. But
yeah,
that's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, what Josh was saying earlier about natural hierarchy, I think, is really important. And what's funny is this is actually something that, like, Rothbard and Hoppe and, like, all of them are really about. And it's honestly amusing to me to hear conservatives who don't understand what they're talking about start being like, oh yeah, libertarians, they just want their child porn and their drugs and their whatever, you know, like they want to do whatever they want. And it's like, do you even, like, the people we're talking about were like, Rothbard wrote a book about how much he hated egalitarianism.
Yep.
Right. He was like, this is the way the world works. This is how it will automatically order itself if we just stop trying to force it into, like, you get egalitarianism when you are statist. You don't get it when you are just, like, looking at God's order and creation and letting it do its thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and he wouldn't, of course, he was agnostic, so he wouldn't have used God. But I would agree with him. Like, it's the famous article or the famous essay is egalitarianism as a revolt against nature. Which I've debated sometimes writing a riff off of that called Feminism as a Revolt Against Femininity. So
that'd be good. Just do that.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I've got a friend who said he would host it. But I think that natural hierarchy, that's a big difference, and also like some of those things that you're talking about, like child porn and things like that, is like, really the issue of, I know consent is thrown out there, and obviously that's a whole other thing, but really there is a question of like, those are some live debates among libertarians about children's rights. But I don't know any libertarian who would say that a child has the right to consent to pornography. None of the serious ones would say that. And I mean, there are some, I would say, conclusions that I am forced to come to by virtue of my political philosophy, such as people should be allowed to use whatever drugs they want. Yeah. So people should be allowed to sell sex for work. Like, those are some conclusions that I'm like, by virtue of my principles, I have to say that I agree with that. But there's also an issue of like priorities. We're like, there's also like libertarians out there who all they can talk about is drugs and prostitution.
Yeah. And it's
like,
very obviously where their priorities are at. Yeah.
Yo, so, we are so not even close to that being a priority, you know?
So being a like theonomic kind of, right? Like, I know, Caleb, that's what you would describe yourself.
That's at least how I describe myself. I don't know.
Right. Like, how would you square that? Like saying, okay, it's you can, in principle, it shouldn't be illegal to offer sex as work, but then like square that with what the Bible says about, you know, even committing adultery. Like God says we should stone those that commit adultery in the Bible. Like, there should be punishment for that.
Yeah. And that's where on the one hand, I would say you got covenantal issues, like what old covenant. I'm also a 1689 guy, you know, and I think that a lot of those, when I say theonomic, I know I'm stealing your word in the same way that I stole anarchy, but there's, for when I say that, what I'm really talking about is I'm talking about 10 commandments, starting from there, moral law, approach to that, in which is where I see, high emphasis on what we would call self-ownership, is that, you know, you and private properties, you know, do not steal, do not murder. But I would also say that natural order is going to come into play a lot in that. There's a guy named Hans Hermann Hoppe who is a philosopher. A libertarian philosopher who wrote several really great books. His big one that everyone talks about is Democracy, the God That Failed. And then he wrote an essay that's kind of a shorter version of it called From Aristocracy to Monarchy to Democracy, and arguing that that's a regression away from the best. But he also posited this concept of covenant communities, which is that there are lots of things that people don't want surrounding them that also that states should not be in charge of, that are not strictly speaking part of the non-aggression principle or non-aggression axiom. Is that for instance, I do not want to live in a city where prostitution is legal. I do not want to be in a city where there are prostitutes standing on the streets. And so what he talked about is there'll probably be, and this is where I'm talking about where I've adjusted to saying unjust claims of monopoly of force, is that there are probably going to be places that say, hey, none of us want prostitution. We all want to be conservative Christians who raise our children to love the Lord and to not see prostitutes walking on the street. And so we're going to take this community and we're going to all live around each other. We're going to pass laws that we have to agree to in order to live here. It's kind of like an HOA except without the insufferable neighbors, you know, it's the idea that we all would agree to this moral philosophy to live here. The question that I, and so in that context, yeah, if you wanted to say, if a whoer walks into our covenant community, we're going to stone them. Well, yeah, if we all agreed to the rules ahead of time, like that would be, that's where the word voluntarism comes in.
In principle, it with your political philosophy, if I'm right, like understanding this correctly, it wouldn't be, that wouldn't, so I'm guessing, like, you're a Christian, so I'm sure, and I've seen your Twitter posts, like you're obviously against abortion and murder, yeah, and stuff like that, and you even said, right, the state or the government can't use unjust violence or unjust force on people, so like to stop murder, that would be a righteous thing to do.
Yes.
Which is clear. I mean, and that's in the Ten Commandments, you shall not murder. So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
with the sex worker thing, I'm like looking at the Ten Commandments, right? It's, you should not commit adultery.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that different, and how would it be like unjust for the government, for and principle, to say, yeah, all prostitution is just wrong? And like,
that's, in principle, I guess I don't have a problem with it. You know, that's what I'm saying, like, local communities. And I think what you're going to find is that, in a more high trust, these are actually economic terms we'll talk about. It's like, high trust and low time preference. The big problem we have with the Federal Reserve and the modern state is that it creates low trust and it creates a high time preference, which time preference means how quickly you want something and how quickly you spend your money to get that thing. And high time preference is instant gratification. So we could also call it impatience from greed. But in a low time preference, high trust society, well, no one's going to want that. No one's going to want those things. And so in a natural order society, I'm actually going to assume that most covenant communities are not going to want prostitution. The question is whether or not, is whether I can define prostitution as a act of something that necessitates political violence, I guess, would be an issue. And insofar as we have a state that does claim territorial monopoly, this is where it gets sticky, is in a, you know, there's a perfect world and there's the world we live in.
So what would be the, so what would be the difference between what you described earlier, like a group of people just getting together and saying, you know, in our community, we're going to outlaw this, right?
Mm.
What would be the difference between that and a state, right?
The difference is that you are agreeing to the rules of the community to live there. So there's one of the things that he talks about, Hans von Hoppe talks about, is there's an issue of physical removal, that people who are enemies to liberty will have to be physically removed from these communities. So put out of the city, sent to live somewhere else, you know, go be a degenerate somewhere else. And that would be a local community sort of decision. And so it's kind of a,
would it be
all of this has to do with secession, just to butt in for just a moment, right? It has more to do with like allowing people the choice to live in the community they would like to live in, as opposed to the society we have right now, which is you are forced to be part of the United States of America. You have absolutely no choice. If you try to leave, we'll go to war with you, like the South tried to do, right?
Yeah.
And I would also, I want to put in my 10 cents real quick about the prostitution thing. I don't think it's a violation of the non-aggression principle in what I would consider a biblical sense, like the biblical way we'd want to take that, to outlaw prostitution and just adultery generally, because consent isn't the standard. And so it is harmful to another person to have sex with them when they're not in a covenant with them. And I think like that, that seems pretty clear in God's law. And I think that's, it's pretty clearly an issue then of violence. You're not going to consider it, like they're not going to consider it violence, but homosexuals don't consider sodomy violence, but it's obvious, it obviously is. Right. So for me, that's a non-issue, but continue, please.
I am like, this is where like, you'll tell, maybe you can tell I am being very, not aggressive about arguing my point here. Like it's kind of like, okay, by logic of the view. Yeah. But I'm like, so for one thing, I would say what makes me different from many anarchists today or many libertarians today is like libertarians have this philosophy or this statement where they say like, you know, liberty in our lifetimes or you know, we'll be able to throw off the state in our lifetimes. I'm like, that's dumb. Like it's not going to happen. And I honestly, if it was possible, I wouldn't want it. And so there's a lot of things that like, you know, will probably work themselves out along those lines. When we get there and also like, yeah, I just feel so not strongly about this. I mean, a real big problem is the fact that as much as pro sex work, people like to say that there's no aggression, you know, it's all peaceful, consensual. It's just almost never the case. Like there's like, no. You know, no. The more we learn about pornography, the more we're like, man, none of this is consensual. Like this is all like, you've got a bunch of girls on drugs being convinced that they need this. And it's just like, if you were to actually take the aggression out of these industries, they would not be able to exist. And so there's a simple fact that, and I know this because I am a Christian, that sex actually cannot be disconnected from covenant without becoming violent.
Yeah,
like I think that's just clear that it has to become violent. Now we're working with natural law. You know, this is who we are as a species. We are meant to be covenant creatures, and sex is meant to be connected to covenant, and anything else is going to be violent. And again, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, if Caleb wants to convince me that we can make it illegal and not violate the non-aggression principle, I'm cool with that. I'm open.
Because for me, exactly. For me, it has less to do with, because I would describe myself as an anarcho-theonomist, which means I'm a theonomist, tried and true, like Greg Bonson, Rush Dooney, all that stuff. I'm sure there'd be plenty of points in which I would disagree with the interpretation that they're putting out for particular passages or whatever. But for me, it has less to do with I think we should be able to go down the list of God's law and be like, yes to all of this. But the way that is going to be applied, especially in the new covenant age, as opposed to in old covenant Israel, but even in old covenant Israel, I think conservatives will look at old covenant Israel and read some statist assumptions into the way that Israel was functioning, that I don't think are there. I think, in either first or second Samuel, I can't remember which one, when Saul is made king, it's pretty clear that God did not want that to happen, right? He specifically said, this should not, like, I'm giving you this king as a punishment. You shouldn't want this king. And whether or not, like, you make the argument that, oh, well, they had laws about kings, and so it was always meant to be a king, it's like, yeah, Jesus was always meant to be the king of that. God was always meant to be, like, that's the point.
And also in context, even in the laws about kings, it says, if you decide you want to be like other nations and do
exactly
this,
yep,
like this
yep.
is how he will rule. And so there's, even there, it's not like a, you will have a king, you must have
a
king.
It's not a given thing. Yeah. So for me, like, there's so many assumptions that are being kind of like front loaded onto this conversation that I think it's as long as you don't have those assumptions, it's very easy to go through the law, the civil law even, right? And be able to draw very libertarian principles from them, specifically with regard to the way that these, what laws are actually in place and why they're there, as opposed to the sort of society we live in now, which is the law would be, you must have a railing on your house. And if you don't have a railing on your house, then the government can fine you this amount of money. And if you don't pay the money, then they can put you in prison. If you resist arrest, then they can kill you. As opposed to God's law, which says you should have a rail on your house, on your roof, right? You should have a rail on your roof. If you don't, no one's going to do anything. If someone falls off your roof, you're liable for their death because you should have had a rail on your, on the roof of your house. It's as simple as that, right? It's the way that we're approaching these laws, as opposed to like the Minority Report state, like bearing down on all of its citizens, trying to get them to conform to a particular thing. The way that like England, for example, functioned for years with common law was just agree. We all agree that this is the law of the land. And everyone just followed the law and their principles that were being drawn out from the common law. And you didn't have to have the overarching state in everybody's lives telling them particularly like you must do this in advance as like a preemptive thing to make sure that nothing bad ever happens to people. It's just like when something bad happens, what do we do about it? Ah, yes, God has a principle. We as a community, we should come together and follow the principle. The end.
Yeah. Just yesterday, our business got a letter saying that this parts of our sidewalk is needing to be replaced, but we have to pay for it. And we,
yep,
it's kind of funny. We have our businesses. We have a whole bunch of homeless people, so it's kind of funny that we're responsible for paying for the sidewalk, yet we can't kick out all these homeless people from standing on the sidewalk. But yeah,
that's anarcho-tyranny.
Yeah,
it's a mess, man.
Yeah, true.
But I actually wanted to kind of go back to something that Josh, you had said, like in describing the community, right? That you come together, a community can come together, make these rules. Would it be wrong for a community to kick somebody out that was originally part of that community, that has their own private property, and then maybe they do something that goes along, that goes against what the community had agreed to live by?
Well, I mean, ostensibly they would have been part of the drafting of the original rules if they were, you know, Caleb pointed out that this is a huge, a big point of that is yeah, that we're also talking about much smaller political units than anything we see today. Like mm-hmm. it's kind of like how democracy works when you're like, when you've got like you and your friends trying to decide where to go for pizza. But then like the larger it gets, the more it just inevitably goes to tyranny. It's same kind of the same thing with like, you know, church budget discussions. You know, that's kind of a democracy, kind of more of a, I mean, honestly, probably more of a representative democracy. You know, the elders make the decisions and then they propose it. And then they all, the church votes on the, you know, the budget. That kind of works because we're all like, we all know each other. Yeah. We all kind of are part of this church because we all agree to this. Whereas if the bigger the group gets, the more it becomes a free for all just to grab whatever cash is available. And so with covenant communities, we're talking about a lot smaller political units. That's why, you know, as Caleb said, secession is really a major point of secession and in the current situation, nullification, where the existing smaller political units are enabled to oppose and nullify higher level decisions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's also called subsidiarity. Nullification is a constitutional word. That's why we use it. But
yeah. So cities wouldn't be in this ideal like world, like cities, I mean, because it'd be very difficult for like a city like Chicago with millions of people to work. Case, right?
And I think that's where you know, you'll probably see these kind of it'd be more like a boroughs sort of situation where different boroughs of the city would kind of be a covenant community in itself. You know, there's there's no reason why they couldn't be in close proximity to other boroughs. But then there's people like me who are going to want to get the heck away from all cities. And And so,
one of the fun things about that, though, too, is because of the world we're living in currently with the technological progress we've been able to gain, the sort of vision of not having to be in big cities actually is infinitely more plausible now than it was when the Industrial Revolution kicked off. Right.
Yeah.
We went through an intense period of growing pain where a lot of tyranny happened because people had to get jobs and they had to go to the city and they had to be ruled over by tyrants. But you know, in God's hashtag dat post mill blessing, technology is actually literally making this sort of thing infinitely more feasible, than ever before.
Yeah. So obviously I think we would agree, like the current way that we're living right now, like the way that our government operates is, it's tyrannical. I mean, it's, in every way, shape, and form that I can think of, it's like, it's hateful. Honestly, that's the word that comes to mind for me. It's like, it's hateful against the people that they're supposed to be protecting and taking care of. That's like the sidewalk thing just reinforced it once more for me. I was like, man, these people really do not care for me. And so another thing with our business, we had the health inspector come and they gave us some like ordinance, and we asked like, okay, why do we do it? We were just curious, like, why does it have to be this way? And the health inspector, there was actually two of them that came, and they were like, we don't know, we don't write the laws, we just do our jobs. And I'm like, man, that's such a bad answer. That's
except they kind of do.
Yeah,
like he's bureaucratic.
Yeah, lobby groups, exactly.
Are really
yeah.
the ones who yep. end up
yeah.
writing laws,
but just like the fact that, you know, I understand where they're coming from, but like at the same time, it's like, well, you're doing the job, you know, if you're supposed to be doing this for the betterment.
Yeah, the Nuremberg defense has never been a very good one.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, it's not like a big deal, right? It's not like to that level of offense, but it's like, I don't know why we're doing this, and I'm gonna go out here and I'm gonna potentially give you a fine and go through this whole process if you don't follow it.
I mean, it is kind of a big deal because it kind of creates the death by a thousand paper cuts sort of thing where businesses aren't able to, like, a business can't start because it can't hire the people needed to make sure they're following every particular health code, you know, piece of everything. And so small businesses, like, this kills small businesses. And that's part of.
I just try
why
to be
we're cool. in this corporatistic.
we try to be cool because I'm like, man, I don't want these people to hate me as a person. Oh, totally. So that because then they'll like they might go after us just out of spite, right? Which is horrible, right? But like, so we agree that, I mean, I could go on and on about things. We've definitely talked about these things on the podcast. So like, we agree this is a bad place to be. I don't know that I'm completely on board with the anarchy. I don't know. I got to think through all this stuff. I got to do a lot more reading for sure. I got to stop reading just dumb
read
books.
Frederick Bastiat's The Law.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Read The Law. That's good. And like, one of the main points that he brings up there that I think is just really important to think about is there is a difference between law and government. And I know Josh said a difference between government and state, even. Like, communities can and do agree to rules without the sword needing to be leveled against them to have the rules in the first place, right? These things just happen, that people agree to rules because they want to live in civilized societies. You don't need the big guy in charge who's just has the bigger army tell everyone, like, this is how we're going to do things. They'll like, if that was how the world worked, churches would never work ever. Right. People wouldn't have any voluntary associations. Charity would not exist. Like, this is the world works by people making voluntary decisions. And yes, there are outliers, who do need to be brought to heel by the sword, but we don't need what we have right now to be able to accomplish those things. It would be the argument, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, my question was going to be, or is going to be, I'm going to ask it. So, what is the solution? Like, what do we have to do, or how do we get to a better place where it's not, we're not ruled by tyrants and we move towards more freedom. I mean, to what it should be like, I mean, what you guys think should be like.
I think, there's sort of a few, I think that is what's notoriously difficult for libertarians is the question of, so what now? Yeah. Because it is the best part about it is also the worst part about it, which is it is a very intellectual, political philosophy. Like, we like reading books. We like writing books. We like talking about the perfect world, or as one, podcaster within the libertarian sphere likes to call it, we love to live in Ancapistan in our heads. And then we don't know what to do with this world. But I think this is where, personally, I think, I mean, one of the big things, like I've already brought it up, is pushing secessionist movements, pushing nullification, pushing the law as down local to the local level as possible. I think there are ways to do that within our current system. I think even without abolishing the United States, I think we can start working in that direction even now. Like, for instance, the 10th Amendment is there exactly for this sort of thing, is to push decisions as far down to the local level as possible. Because part of the problem with the health code instructor is that they are getting rules from higher ups. We're getting rules from the higher ups, and they have to have these rules because otherwise we won't get funding and things like that. But if it's an issue of, you've got a local health code and health code for your city or for your neighborhood, that it's much more likely to be less arbitrary and more, yeah, no, we're just trying to make sure that your customers are kept safe when they come in here. And I think that's a big thing. This is something that I'm having trouble getting my fellow libertarians on board with. But I'm actually, even as a libertarian anarchist, really interested in the broad conversation on Christian nationalism, because I actually think one of the things that one of the heroes in libertarianism is Ron Paul. And one of the things he talks about is that this only works with a moral populace.
Yep.
And so I'm having trouble getting other libertarians on board with this, to be like, you know, it might be a step in the right direction to just make the existing government actually enforce morality, I know enforce morality, that's a sticky term, but like to from a high place, encourage Christian morality,
have some transcendent they're pointing to, as opposed to just making it up as
yeah.
along.
From what I've seen, like, correct me if I'm wrong, like the Libertarian Party as like movement as a party, it's mostly because obviously there's a lot of people that want to do drugs, from what I've gathered, but it's not Christian. Like, are there a lot of Christians in it?
More so than used to be. And I would say that's part of what the new chairperson, her name is Angela McArdle. She was pushed by the Mises Caucus. One of the things that really impressed me about her and why I got behind her is because she came on a Zoom call with a bunch of people from Iowa, and she was talking about how, like, do Christians even feel welcome in the Libertarian Party today? And saying, like, this is what we want, is we want Christians to feel comfortable in the Libertarian Party. And so there is more of a push, and some of our big names, in at least what I believe to be the better areas of libertarianism, are Christians. Like a guy named Bob Murphy is one of our favorite economists, and he's a Christian who, according to some people, I've not ever heard him say it directly, belongs to a church that affirms the Westminster Confession and himself subscribes to it. You've got Tom Woods, who's a Catholic. Lou Rockwell's Catholic. Ron Paul is a Baptist of some sort. I've not really been able to nail down what kind. There's a lot of the people who are in the important and some of the best libertarians who are really rising to prominence once again in the libertarian movement and party are Christian of some kind. Yeah. Not all of them solidly so. And that's part of the reason why I have a podcast, is because we're trying to teach libertarian Christians to be a little more Christian. It's kind of one of our things. But yeah, like that would be, I think that's changing. And yeah. I think that's also part of the reason why the libertarian Christians are not always fully Christian, is because they're figuring out how to be a libertarian Christian. And within libertarian spaces, they're encouraged to not be so Christian. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of things. But I'm optimistic about the future of the Libertarian Party. I don't know if they're ever going to win any elections, or if they're going to just be an opposition party who kind of always are there, kind of, you know, acting as a major lobbying organization in the form of spoiling Republican elections if they're not being liberty enough. And I'm okay if that's all Libertarian Party ever does. We'll not run a candidate as long as you guys, you know, don't be a bunch of crazy neocons. I'm cool with that. But I do think that is changing a little bit. But I think there's a ways to go.
Yeah.
One of the things that I often say on our podcast is, so when we say we're libertarian Christians, what does that word Christian modify it? Like, how does that modify the word libertarian? A lot of times what I've found is that Christian libertarian modifies it just as I'm trying to prove that Christians can be libertarians. Whereas I think anything Christian is tacked onto needs to modify it in a significant way. And so libertarianism must be modified by Christianity. And there's a ways to go as far as that goes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you as a pastor, like, is this something that you talk with your congregation about, or is this something?
Not at all. I think it's actually inappropriate. It's actually inappropriate usage of my place. You know, as a pastor, my job is to preach, you know, the straightforward, just what the Bible says, and the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is actually another reason why I think the Christian Nationalist conversation is interesting, is because they're all acknowledging this is something that happens outside of, and actually I think I've heard Doug Wilson speak to the same extent, that like, this is broader kingdom work, not strictly church work. You know, what did he call it? Churchianity sort of, or no, that was a guy on Apologia Radio was talking about churchianity. I think whenever I talk about this stuff, if I'm talking about it to a member of my congregation, I always say, first of all, before I answer your question, I want to be clear that I'm taking off my pastor hat, and I do not speak with the same authority that I do when I'm speaking on justification by faith alone, you know, things like that. I don't speak with that same authority. I'm giving you my opinion based on the wisdom that I think that I have from scripture. And so, yeah, I would say that sometimes my libertarian perspective causes me to see certain things in the Bible that I will bring up.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, what happens when you get to a passage like in First Samuel or Romans 13, when these issues are obviously on full blast.
I think Romans 13, I actually feel completely comfortable affirming the whole thing.
We all should.
It's in the Bible.
but I would say that what's clear from it is that it calls me to, like, I will not, again, that's why I'm not a communist anarchist, is because I can't violently oppose the government. Like, that's like, mm-hmm. that'll take a lot more than what's, sure, you know. But I think there's and it's largely because I'm supposed to submit to them. And I would say that I have to, even, you know, I actually, this is a debate among libertarian Christians, but I actually believe that the Bible does command me to pay my taxes. So even though I do believe taxation is unjust, I believe that I'm told that I am supposed to pay those taxes. Whether I agree with the tax or not, I am commanded to pay it by my Lord. And so, but I would also say, when I come to those passages, to be like, hey, but one of the things that I'm going to point out is that they were in an empire. We are in a different form of government. And I'm going to say, I have to submit to the governing authorities. But it doesn't say what kind of form of government those authorities have to take. And so for me, the ideal would be I'm submitting to voluntary community, covenant community governing authorities. But in the meantime, yes, I have to submit to the federal government, insofar as they're not overstepping bounds and stuff like that, you know.
Right, it's the, it's that last sentence that gets me. Yeah, that, no, that means I can, that means I can largely ignore most of the things they do. Right, but I actually do agree with you. Like I don't we wouldn't advocate such for legal reasons on this podcast, tax evasion. but just in general, like yes, we're called to live peaceful and quiet lives. Yeah. We're not called to be revolutionaries. We're called to be reformationists, if anything. That's not really a noun, but you know. But I think we'd probably have to get down to brass tacks as to like where the specific line is for either of us. But I think the line is probably much further back, as in there's way more things the federal government is trying to get me to do that I don't have to listen to them about than maybe some other person might say, even another libertarian or whatever. Right. That's just where I am.
I'm curious, Josh, like how did your, maybe your, like how did your area, local government and state government handle everything that happened with COVID? Caleb, you might want to edit that out so that the algorithm doesn't get us.
Iowa was among the better states.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I say, you know, like as part of my political philosophy, I believe that monarchy is actually superior to democracy. So I'm in favor of crowning Kim Reynolds as queen of Iowa and letting her reign forever, because largely because of the way
wasn't she the person, the one person who was like, we will not have any lockdowns not in the quite. State. Okay.
She did. Yeah, she did.
But South Dakota, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah. South Dakota was. We were, she kind of followed the prevailing opinion for about like 6 weeks, but after that she said, you know what, we're done with this, we're done, open it up. In fact, she got a lot of heat, a lot of people called her, you know, that word Kim, and tried to say she was killing Iowans and stuff like that, but ultimately history has borne her out as correct, and she did very good. And I live in a small town that's largely, you know, it's largely Republican. There's a few Democrats, but and they're very loud, but they're not significant as far as a voting block is. And so as soon as she opened up, places started opening up. But yeah, for a while we had to wear masks everywhere and all that, but there was never any, even a whiff of jab mandates. There was never even a whiff of, like, yeah, we were shut down very shortly, and we were able to start gathering again very quickly. One of the quicker, I might be wrong about this, but I think we were actually reopened before Florida was. And so, you know, I feel really good about how my state responded. Not perfect, but better than most. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Would that be one thing that you would say that Christians had to like submit to? Like if the government was to say you have to wear a mask or you can't, no?
I don't think so. I did it out of convenience.
Yeah.
And also like, okay, you know, I don't want to throw my elders under the bus. They were trying to use the best wisdom they had available to them.
Yeah.
But I probably would have made a different decision if I were, lead bastard, but I'm not trying to throw them under the bus again. They did what they could with the wisdom that they had, but I submitted to my elders in that way, to wear a mask in church for a while. We'd social distance for a while, but I don't think that we were required to follow that. There's also a sense in which you can always judge your government by its own laws, and by our laws, this should have never happened. That's just unacceptable the way it happened, even without going to the moral law and the permit, you know, the permissions that are given by the Bible for governing institutions. And so, yeah.
Right. That's part of it too, for me, is like the what really actually rules me as the governing authority is the Constitution of the United States. And just because some random tyrant doesn't want to follow the Constitution doesn't mean that I have to stop following the Constitution. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, this has been a good conversation, man. A lot of interesting things to think about. Like, I don't know. I generally, when I think about government, I try to just think through like principles of scripture. Like, obviously God established a government in the Old Testament. And I think generally speaking, like, we had a conversation about this, Caleb and I did, on the podcast. I don't know. You know what? I don't know. I might have to walk back the theonomy claim. I don't know, man. Like, I'm still thinking through it, but I definitely see that a lot of the same problems that we like can point to together and obviously say, like, there's a lot of big things that we should all, whether we call ourselves theonomists or Republicans or anarchists, we're Christians that can like identify, yeah, abortion is murder. Let's go after that. Yeah. Like, let's stop that.
For me, a lot of this has to do with, I think we all across the board as conservative, not just politically, but generally conservative, right? Bible believing, fundamentalist, whatever you want to call it, you know, Christians, that these things are wrong and they need to stop.
Yeah.
The question then becomes, how do we stop them? What are the right means in which we can stop them? And I think Josh would agree, would advocate way, way, way more on the church and family side of things, right? Those institutions need to be, they're the solution to this, not the state. And so to the point where, like, if the state just like stopped doing everything it's doing right now, that would be great. There would be chaos, but we'd figure it out, right? Like, it's one of those things where, like, what is actually the foundational unit of society? Like, what keeps society together? It's not the big daddy government. It's churches and families. So
and that's why I sometimes will, like I said, I'll sometimes say that I'm a patriarchist, because really when I think about natural law, I'm like, natural law society, I actually look at Israel in the desert, and Israel when it first came in, came into the land of like tribal territorial, you know, family based societies. And and I would say that, yeah, like you said, if there were no state, that's probably what we would see, is very much people arranging themselves based on largely on family ties. I actually don't agree that it would be great if the state went away today.
Did I say great? I didn't mean necessarily great. Obviously, there'd be a lot of chaos. I just they're not the savior in this situation. Yeah. They're part of the problem.
Yeah. And so when I think about like, what does it mean to me? What does this, you know, whatever you want to call it, mean to me? For me, it's about what is one of the, you know, like, when you're sailing old, you know, in the ancient world, you have certain stars that you would base your calculations on. One of my calculations is based on that, is on the self-ownership, private property, absolutism, non-aggression principle. I was about to call it my North Star, but it's really not that. It's one of them, though I don't anticipate ever in my life, maybe ever, period, there being a society that actually runs like this. It kind of just stands as one of the ways that I judge certain actions by governments is, okay, does it align with this non-aggression axiom? And ultimately, like, you know, one of the things that we talk about, my partner and I, is this is a provisional political perspective. It's always been that. We're always like, one day Christ will come and put everything right, at which point we say we will cease to be anarchists of any variety. Like, we will gladly bow to the one true king. Like,
right, because that's the thing.
I'm a monarch.
What are we anarchists about, right? Like, what are we being an anarchist towards? It's not Jesus. It should never be Jesus.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Good conversation. On a taboo topic. Anarchy, man. That is very taboo, I think, nowadays. Do you guys have anything else to add before we kind of wrap up?
I'm sure we could go on this for hours still, but we can probably call
part
it there.
Two.
Josh,
thank you so much again for coming on the podcast, man. Go ahead, tell people where, like, what your podcast name is and where they can find you and follow you on the social media.
The main place is the Anarchist Bible Study. It's a weekly we have three episodes that air weekly because we just cannot stop talking. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday episodes on YouTube. Tuesdays we call preambling, which is kind of our current events thing. Wednesday is actually our Bible study episode, where we are going through the book of Revelation. And that's kind of fun. We call them bonus episodes because they're not always certain that we're going to get to, which tends to be more of a reaction. We're either reacting to some kind of article or some kind of video, and that usually comes out on Thursdays. But the main one is Wednesday. It's called the Anarchist Bible Study. And you can also find me on Twitter at IOWANCAP, IOANCAP. It's actually a portmanteau of IOAN and ANCAP, which is short for anarcho-capitalist. So that's
It was really funny when Angel pronounced it as Iowan cap, because then I was like, hat? Yeah.
So I get what you get. I need to listen for anarchist capitalist. Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
But those would be the place to find me. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And before we go, so we have a very important question we ask all of our guests. It's to me, but I'm not that smart. It's the most important question of the night. Some people would say it's a dumb question. Caleb and I have this long-standing feud. This is why he had to move across the nation.
That's not why.
We're trying to decide which one is better, Qdoba or Chipotle.
Ooh. See, I'm not big on either. I'm just trying to like picture, like, I've got to pick between one of those two. My friends are making me go to one. Which do I go? I might err on the side of Chipotle.
Hey.
Dang. I think Angel's winning. Angel has more Chipotle votes than anyone, winning. I think.
Oh, yeah. Because it's the better one, man. Awesome, man. That's the correct
person in chat correct. Also says Qdoba. Or it says Qdoba. Aha, there you go.
No.
Says he knows you. In Twitch chat, actually.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, we're streaming in multiple places, so yeah.
Yeah, we're on the interwebs. Yeah, good conversation. It's been fun. I don't have anything else to say. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Josh.
Tuning in. Thanks so much, Josh, and everybody. Y'all have a good life.
You can tell Angel doesn't know how to end this episode.
Every time we do something different.
See you guys. We're out.
Oh, man.